Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, Silas?
Yes.
Blessed be my brother.
Why are you crying?
Well, I am calling you from my office today. I'm trying my best to remain as composed as I can be. I have been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. It is unlikely that I will survive to call this program again.
Rashi?
Yes, it is, baby.
From down in Westbury Road.
Correct. The calling program has become like a family unto me, and I thought it only prudent to make the effort to make this call. But I have to tell you, right now I feel like my own body has become my own house of exile. And that's putting it mildly. I expect that I wouldn't be on this plane of existence in the next 90 days. I'll be very fortunate if I could survive up to 7 months, because the published data suggests that as long as it reaches stage 4, and it has already begun to cross from my left lung to my liver, which is the nearest other organ next to it. And that in itself has its almost irreversible consequences. So I wanted to seize this moment, now that I am in not much pain, because that's just as painkillers. So, well, I don't have to say bid my calling family farewell, but to let them know that I appreciate the time when they've gathered me under the boughs of their love. And there are many of them that I can't call or to call by name, but I deeply appreciate it.
Tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow. Macbeth, Act 5, Scene 5. Farewell to a brilliant Barbadian. That was sent to us by Carl Moore. Good morning to you. This is the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. And Dennis Johnson, I'll be your host until 2. Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding by Elton John was the musical bed that I chose to put under the words of Rashid Foster, who was informed passed away on Saturday. In one of our conversations, Rashid had asked me to play Freeform Funkified Filth by Buddy Miles and Carlos Santana. He would have liked it, but I chose not to, because I did not want to offend the sensitivities of the Brass Tacks calling family, who sometimes are a little caustic in their remarks when you fall beneath the standards to which they hold. Another one, a member of the Brass Tacks family, leaves for the other side. I hope, it is my sincere wish, that whenever I do cross over, our spirits at least recognize each other in passing. Go well, my friend. It was a pleasure having shared with you. 4341-790-266-IVOB or 266-4862. You can send a WhatsApp message to Brass Tacks at starcomnetwork.net. Yesterday, I listened as the producer to the comments made by several of the callers and the lament that job opportunities in Barbados were, to quote the late Carson Small, like grandma's teeth, few and far between. I went looking through last week's papers, because every time I glance through the newspapers, one of the things I look at is the want ads. Yellowfin Water Sports wants a water sport coordinator. Pilot Management Services wants a building service contractor firm. They're a business contractor firm, and they're looking for persons to fill the position. Someone wants a hotel concierge, web developers, somebody wants a lawyer, wines and spirits, Caribbean area manager for Stansfield Scott, TVET Council senior technical officer, packaging machine operators, pasta machine operators, forecourts attendants and cashiers, National Sports Council needs general workers, systems technician, assistant accountant at Chaffet, trainee systems engineer at the Barbados Light and Power Company, a payroll clerk for UNA. The BDO Barbados International Professional Services, they're looking for highly qualified people. Chickmont Foods, Coral Reef Club needs a general manager. I thought that one is from Barbados. I take bets on that one, but I may be wrong. Champers need a food and beverage server. There's a corporate services council and so on. So the question that springs to mind from time to time when I look at these want ads, and then I look sometimes at the application to the for a work permit, I ask myself what it is exactly we're training to do. What is it, or people have multiple degrees in, and what exactly were the opportunities they were pursuing that are no longer there? The reason I ask those questions is because I believe somewhere deep in this whole discussion that we're having about lack of opportunities sometimes stem from the fact that a lot of our people, both young and old, have no idea what they want to do. Lots of people do things they don't like to do, but they do it because it pays well. But they're not the right fit for the job, so sometimes they become frustrated in the job. But it's one of those discussions I suppose we can have as we continue this discourse on this, the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Michelle Braffitt is the producer, technical operator, and to quote Sanka, the voice you hear when you call. Brass Tacks Monday, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Dennis. How are you today?
I am all right, sir. And you?
I'm all right, too. We are going to surprise Barbados today. I don't want to get into any stressful discussion today. I want to take a day off on that.
Oh, that's good.
But there's one thing I want to point out, though. That school up by Ridley.
Luther Thorn? The primary school?
Yeah.
Luther Thorn.
There's a pedestrian sign, and this is what it reads. Children crossing ahead. But the thing is, the sign is right at the crossing. Mm-hmm. Right on the crossing. That sign should be further up. That's there by McInerney. Alerting motorists that there's a pedestrian crossing ahead. And then there should be
they don't
a
have
sign
a light? At,
no, they don't have a light.
Oh, okay. I was trying to remember
the sign
they had
is
one.
Right on the crossing. Mm-hmm. Pedestrian, children crossing ahead. Right? It's badly placed.
Well, you see, the thing is, a road sign is supposed to be a certain distance, I suppose, to alert you, yes, but you're also supposed to be able to pick up a road sign from a distance. So in other words, you should actually see that sign before you get right up to it. It's like a stop at major roadhead sign. I take your point. That school has some significance to me. Both my children went there, and I am very familiar with the area and the crossing and everything about that school I'm very familiar with. So I take your point. I pass there from time to time, and that's why I was trying to remember whether or not there was a light. There's the sign I remember seeing on the crossing itself. Yes.
There's also a traffic warden there.
Mm-hmm.
So with the sign, I don't even need to put another. So I just need to relocate that sign. I live further up the road. Right? Mm. The color is great. The color is just like the ones by the hospital.
Mm.
If you don't see that color, you shouldn't be driving no more.
Which is why I said you're supposed to pick it up from a little distance.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's an international sign, yeah.
Right. Now, music.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you now, Marley will always be my man.
Uh-huh.
But. You know.
Asians do love a but.
It is strange, you know. I don't know if it's strange, if it, that's the word I should use. But those three individuals, Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, Bonnie Wheeler. And you know, you've got to give it to Jamaicans, especially those three. They were not destined to be together. They had to break up. They had to. And break up for a positive reason. Each of them had their messages. And what is so unique, each of the music, the actual music, differ from the others. None of the music was the same. You get my point?
Mm-hmm.
Marley's music was different than Tosh. As a matter of fact, as I told you already, Tosh's music was... Let me stop him now. This is putting it mild. Let me get it. You know, they're in the middle ground. Let me stop it here and now. I guess you'd be better able to understand it or explain it to others than they can, because I just go from left to right. Right.
Anyway, I did project one for you. I got two others to finish. Peter was militant. You and I have had this discussion before. I told you he's my favorite Wheeler. He'll always be my favorite Wheeler. There's a grittiness about his presentations, and there are times, I can't think of a love song that he did, but anyhow, maybe there are. But I enjoyed the music. It's one of the things I think made the time enjoyable for me, because they captured the mood, the essence of what that era meant. So the apartheid movement, black consciousness. He even sang about marijuana, being arrested. Every part of his experience was put into song and words. And I think one of the things today, when we complain about the message in the music and what we call the dirtiness and filth in music and poor lyrics, etc., it's an expression of the times. It's the way people express themselves today, and whether you like it or not, and that's the language they speak.
And there's something else, Daniel.
We all. Oh, hi,
there's
all.
Something else. Mm-hmm. Hello?
I listen to you.
There's something else. I don't know. I never heard you spoke about it, but you would have realized it. To me, he was the best lead guitarist in the world. I watched that song straight up when they were recording it. And this man... never look down.
That's why you suddenly get Tosh.
He just played the music. You know, the only thing he looked down is like when his head like it was third and one. But then look at the guitar. He just played this note as if
it was taking
a stroll.
You know,
he was an excellent guitarist.
Yeah, there's a fellow. There's a fellow in Barbados by the name of Ian Hoggedaline that reminds me of Peter, because in the middle of whatever groove he's in, he suddenly goes to wailing electric guitars. But yep, he was the top guitarist, and I'm glad you finally discovered his music, sir. And it's good to hear you being calm today for a change.
And let me tell you, though, I want to leave you with this. Marty is still my man.
Yeah, I hear that. I can convert you eventually. Have a good one, buddy. It's the trilogy, 1, 2, 3. You can't have one without the other. But anyway, they worked well for a while. Brass Dex, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, ma'am.
Am I on air?
That's the only way you'll be talking to me.
Well, husband. I just want to speak to you 1 minute, please, off air.
Ma'am, that is impossible. I keep trying to tell people no one can speak to the moderator or the producer off air, not even for 30 seconds. Impossible to do that, ma'am. Sorry about that. 4341790, message from the Reverend H. Malcolm Gates states, sincere condolences to the family and friends of Rashid Foster. May he rest in perpetual peace. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning. I too send my condolences to the former caller. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, to his relatives and friends and everyone else. Now, on the 24th of August 2015, not the year, former Minister Donwell Ennis said, the complaints we, the quality of service from Barbados' telecommunication providers, Flo and Digicel, are beginning to trickle into his ministry. Right? Mm-hmm. And this went on to say, he gave the assurance, in fact, that government would not just take note of the complaints, but was prepared to engage the two companies in deeper discussions and setting stronger standards where necessary. He went on, the former minister went on, he admitted that he had some complaints about the quality of service from Flo and to some extent, Digicel. Right? Following the recent merger between Flo and Line, there have been complaints from subscribers about poor service, with many people expressing frustration over the constant recorded messages about unavailability of parties call. Mm-hmm. It is disclosed that he would be meeting with executives of the Digicel the next day to discuss matters pertaining to their own situation in Barbados. And he had a meeting scheduled with Flo for the next week to discuss similar issues. This is very, very interesting, because obviously the government would have changed their service providers from Flo to Digicel. And it's also quite interesting to note Digicel and Flo, this seems to be a trend. Rather interesting. Going back to the same year, 2015. Right? I find that rather interesting. I remember Mr. Strong was in the studio, I think a couple of days ago. I tried desperately to get in, but I didn't. But I'm sorry that I didn't get in, because the caller, in fact, the last caller that we had, he's constantly saying about how an economy can grow and you send home people. I would have really wanted to get in to assist Mr. Strong in that talk about sending home workers, because in 2017, the wages bill stood at $778 million, $61 million more than the $770 million in 2016. Right? On the 1st of September 2018, the BWO General Secretary, Tony Moore, said the public sector was padded in the last month of the DLP tenor. And if you even go back a little further, on the 2nd of February 2017, the then governor of the central bank, he said, if the bank don't provide $50 million monthly, public servants will not be paid. Right? That's a staggering $6 billion over the 10-year period. But you also will note that 22 days later, he was fired from his job. The point that I'm making in all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That from all the indicators on the ground that the last administration brought back on workers before the last election. And he's saying, so basically, they signed on with the Sufbank people in the 2013 to send home, were overall 5,859 people. That's the overall figure, but I don't think they got there. Because they were sent home the initial 3,000, I don't think they ever get to the 501 or the 2,835 that was due to arbitration. So that's why people had to go back home. People had to go off. So I don't hear the complainers complaining, but when 3,000 people were cut in 2014, but this administration cut at least, 1,500 or so jobs. And they're going on that. He does not understand anything about the economy. If you have on too many employees, it would destroy the whole economy as it was doing in the last administration. I would like to call and explain that when Mr. Strong was on to help to assist, because you know he don't be studying everything all the time. Mm-hmm. That would match up the overall economy. So it is no good having too many or too few. That's in cases of several things. The correct amount is always where. And as I said, it bared out there in the governor's central bank. Said he just to give the government $50 million monthly. The pay raise is salary. That means the people weren't needed.
You see, sir, one of the challenges that we face in the delivery of services in the public sector is this. If we had, over the years, maintained a system that was truly independent for the hiring and the confirming of people in the public service, and if there were regular appraisals done, where people were promoted based on performance, where people were allowed to retrain and train as an ongoing process as things developed and changed, we would not find ourselves in the situation where we have to talk about sending home thousands of people. But we didn't. The public service became a washpan of professionals plus political appointees, plus obstructionists, plus the minister send me's, and a whole lot of other things got thrown into the mix. Friends and family and people who support the campaign. And what happened was that we undermined the credibility of the institutions to start with, one. Then two, we started to downplay the value of the qualified professionals in the system. And then three, which is the worst part of it all, whenever they had to be right-sizing, downsizing, whatever you want to call it, people were picked because whoever the somebody is. I heard Corey yesterday saying the ministers stepped back and the permanent secretaries stepped back. So apparently the gardeners fired, you know, the other people. Sir, we made a mess of the system. And the only way it could be corrected is if we go back and almost reinvent the public service. And I don't know when we're going to do it, how we're going to do it, or if we have the desire to do it. I'm joined by station manager David Ellis. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Dennis. Normally I would be here on a Monday morning, but I have other business to attend to. But it would be remiss of me if I didn't come and say something on the passing of regular caller Rashid Foster. I want to say that we at Starcom in general and Brass Tacks in particular are deeply saddened by his passing. You know, he was one of the familiar voices on this program. But at the same time, though, we are strengthened by the many thought-provoking and eloquent contributions which he brought to the program over the years. What he brought was a profound passion for this Barbadian community in which he resided, and a desire to bring his voice to bear on their problems, confronting people in general, but you could hear that he was particularly concerned about the poor. What wasn't well known by many is that in several ways, Rashid went out of his way to assist other people in and around his neighborhood within the limits of his resources. And we shall miss his voice as we remember his message.
Thank you very much, David. His facility with the language and certainly the passion that he brought for his community clearly came out in his contributions, and I thank you for that as well. 4341790, Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Sir.
How are you doing?
I am doing all right, and you?
I trust you're having a good day.
Well, thus far it has been tolerable. Tolerable.
Well, once it's tolerable for you, I know you will be comfortable.
Yeah, I'm all right.
I just called to make a few small points. I was coming down Belmont Road into the city this morning. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the traffic on that area was flowing relatively smooth after 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And that is not a normal. So when I got almost past the what used to be the roundabout, or is the roundabout, I realized what had happened. There was a motorcycle cop mm-hmm. parked on the path, standing up, moving from east to west. And the traffic was moving to and fro smoothly on in and out of the city. As I got to the park, I saw another bike cyclist coming up, cruising, and that street was working as smooth as ice. Now, I say that to say, and this is not points for anybody, what I'm saying is the fairness, and I don't think that Barbadians in general give the police force the benefit or the respect that is due to them. Now, without a police force, many of us could not leave our houses. We couldn't go to work. We couldn't leave to do anything. Mm-hmm. So what I shortly want to say is that not just talking when the police do something that is good and wrong. Some people don't even say anything as far as they're concerned. It is only if they do something wrong. Oh, dear. The public is going to tear them down. But my major statement that I want to make here this morning. The police station at Worthing's and there's a dual connection right now mm-hmm. with the two stations. I'm not 100% on what it is. Mm-hmm. 1 minute, Dennis. 1 minute.
Sure, sir. That's when you're a busy
right,
man.
Phone, yes.
Yeah, I realize that.
It's a dual complex at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think the Prime Minister in her speech would have said, you know, your reward is for the hard work in which you put in and so forth. I simply want to say to Barbadians that we need to treat our police a little better. And when I say that, as small as it might be, for argument's sake, I would love to see District A with a canteen where the police don't have to buy from a van or decide or depend on a van and things like that. And I wouldn't go further than this one. I would hope that it get back to the Prime Minister and the Attorney General, because you wouldn't be able to get to them. So this is the best media to do it through. I believe any time that a police put in 20 years in the police force or over, he should not leave the force at 33 and a third as a private. Because if he was that daft, he couldn't pass the exam for coming in. And this is my humble opinion. I don't know what other Barbadians think about it. We have police in there with degrees.
Yeah.
And as much as masters, from what I've heard sometime back, and still constables, I think that we need to do something about that one. And I hope when the Attorney General hear, because they would hear, about a conversation like this, that they start to look at it in a different light and reward those persons with 25 years in and not a stripe, but they have passed the exam, they have passed those exams for sergeant, etc. I hope that they all look at it and let us treat our policemen in this country with a little more respect.
Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you a couple of things about this. Because one of the things I keep hearing when I sit here, and as a matter of fact, there's a WhatsApp message that brings another one to the fore. I hear teachers talking about people in the teaching service with multiple degrees up to master's and above. The WhatsApp message said they're at least 5 to 7 years, maybe more, for the last 5 to 7 years, maybe more, medical doctors can't find work to do in Barbados. Some are working as receptionists, subbing for 4 weeks in a year as doctors, if they're lucky, and some selling food, right? Now, you talk about policemen who also have degrees. Some have law degrees, some have other degrees, criminology up to master's. And you're saying they spent 20 years in the service as constables. Going back to the comment I made to the previous caller about regular work assessments and rewarding people after the assessments, what it is we're doing that's wrong? Because I remember at one point you had constables, then you had corporals, then sergeants. They removed the rank of corporal, I think, and you went to sergeant. And for a period, I remember there were more acting appointments or people acting in positions in the police force than, I don't know, in Hollywood, apparently, because just about everybody was acting at one point. What is it we're not doing?
Well,
Is it we don't assess them? Is it that we're spiting people? What is it that we're doing? Because there has to be a reason why it is competent people are not being, quote-unquote, rewarded. Is it that we can't raise their salaries without giving them an extra stripe or two? What is the problem?
I think all those problems can be solved.
Well, I know most problems can be solved, but the first thing you got to do is identify what is the problem.
I have a strong belief that the current consultant to the police force, who was
the
commissioner
right.
at one point in time,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly, under his watch, there were a few fellas who were promoted that, let me use the term, and I don't want to speak out of turn, to the best of my knowledge,
mm-hmm.
would not have been what we call paper qualified. Okay.
Right.
But I believe, checking on the work and the background of some of these fellas and performance, and the board met and they would have made the decisions, I am assuming from a peripheral point of view, I am not a police by any chance, but I am speaking on things that a civilian outside would pick up, that pay attention to what is happening with one of your leading force in the country. Because David, let me say this, Dennis, let me say this to you. I am one of the people, very cognizant, that had not for the police, you couldn't leave St. Thomas to go to work at night. I couldn't leave to be out in the weekend to work. Then work is there for me. I wouldn't be able to be here at work now. I hope that when I will have to be hoping that when I get back home, that it is there.
Yeah, you're home there.
And it is about it. To add insult to injury, the police forces, who want to believe that or not, the police force is doing a job. Crime commit, they're being solved. The court, they'll wait on the court till it's being done. The fellas are doing, and they use the fellas broadly because they're men and women,
they are
doing a very good job. And I will not elaborate on it any longer. And I am not blowing any horns. They can't blow any horns or any trumpets for anyone. All I need to say is that these people should be treated a little better. It needs some dialogue, and let's get a little fairness across, make the people a little more comfortable. And I do believe the Prime Minister would want to do that at her earliest opportunity.
Well, she was
let the fellas have like a canteen at District A, start to promote some of the fellas that are there, and let them carry on the work they're doing, because they are working. And then with that, I shall close. I wouldn't go into any of the subject. I shall close and hear some of the comments that may or may not come. Have a good day, my friend.
You too, sir. I, again, always good to hear from you. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, please. I am calling on behalf of two guys that normally go to the psychiatric hospital. And it is in connection with their welfare checks that they normally would get from the welfare department. But they have not seen them. And I called, and they are up for review to go back in to speak to an officer to see if they are still going to psyche and doing what they should be doing. But the point that I am trying to make is that these guys have been in the system for a long time, and the welfare is saying that there is a backlog of cases, and they can only be seen on the 19th of March. But these people are in the system for a long, long, long time. They don't work. They don't have any other source of income. So they would be basically be out from getting their supplies, as they normally do, for 2 months, because they did not get any checks this month. And they would not be getting any next month for sure, because they have to go back in for review. Is there anything that you can speak to us on the matter, please?
No, ma'am. Why would be able to do that?
Oh, so you cannot say anything on behalf of the people, the persons that are ill?
When you say something on behalf, what do you mean?
I mean, you don't work at the welfare department anyway.
No, I don't. Not the psychiatric department.
No. Well, that is true too, but, you know, I'm just saying that these people would not be without meals and that sort of thing.
Right, and you're making the point. So what it is you want me to do?
Oh-ho, so those that will be listening, the point should be getting over to them.
Well, I would hope so, because it got over to me while you were saying it.
Well, yes, because I'm just, as I said before, I was just calling on behalf of these people, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, that have been looking, that have been looking out for the checks, and they have not even received a letter indicating, well, this is what has to be done. So, you know, that's basically, I was just highlighting really what is going on with these patients.
And I hope that having spoken out on their behalf, that those who listened and that they understand the plight of those folk will, you see, the difficulty is this, right, ma'am?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people may be in a similar position. I don't know what you said. They said there was a backlog.
Mm-hmm.
If you have individuals who have a specific problem with departments, mm-hmm. if they present themselves or someone goes on their behalf and say, look, this is the situation, we're in the system, you can perhaps initiate a dialogue where they say, okay, look, you're number 27 on a list of 127. If you give us a week, we should be able to clear the backlog up to where you are. The problem, 9 out of 10 times, is that, and having been somebody who's been dependent on NIS checks and sick leave and various other challenges, including unemployment, I know sometimes it is degrading or demeaning to the individual to have to go and sit in a line and have people look at them and say, well, wait, he used to work, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? You know, I used to see him call and tie, why are you here? That kind of thing, okay? So there are people who, because of their circumstances, either they don't have the money to keep going and checking or whatever, they do not go. And then yesterday we heard these comments about how some people are treated when they go to some of the agencies. All these things add up to people saying, look, I have a problem, let somebody speak on my behalf, put it out there in the hope that it gets fixed. The problem with that is it can't get fixed if you just put it out there, because the officer sitting with 125 cases to deal with And they're dealing with a backlog that I don't know how long it is or how what it is. Mm-hmm. Added to the fact that they may be given additional duties because of layoffs, whatever their personal circumstances, their frame of mind may not be, let me try and get rid of this backlog as fast as possible. Their mindset will be, I taking my time with all these things they give me here, I could just do so much. Now, I'm not saying that that is the attitude. I'm saying it may be a factor. So if the person goes and says, this is my problem, I am Mr. X, the last time I heard from you was so-and-so, can you tell me what my situation is? They may get a better response than just saying there are some people out there who have this problem, because it just may not hit the person who has to deal with it until they see a face.
Now, you see, I was not asking you really to do anything about it, because these people, they would normally receive, they would go in for a review, say, every 6 months. Mm-hmm. And there was sent out a letter indicating, well, you have to be seen on the 3rd of February. I'm just making a date.
Yeah.
And that has not been done. So these people were just looking and looking. And only that I call on behalf of them to relate to them that this is what is happening. So these people were basically looking. I asked if they couldn't get a voucher. She said that she couldn't give a voucher at this time. You know, but we were just saying that if a letter was sent out, where these people would at least try to go somewhere where somebody would still give them a meal, because they're still without the check, you know, to go to the little supermarket or to get their toiletries and get something to eat. So I didn't expect you to do anything. I was just making a query on their behalf, you know, to say to the persons, because these are not new cases. These are people that were sent by the psychiatric department to that department where they are supposed to look, well, I don't know if I should say that, but where they look after these people. So these people are not new in the system. So 2 months before something for these people, what are they going to do? So that's all I was just calling to say, not that for you to do anything specifically about the matter, but I was just highlighting the problems that these people from the psychiatric department that are there going through.
Mm-hmm. I got
and, you know, you're in their minds, you know, they're not well people. So we don't know a hungry man is an angry man.
I hope that's not so. But
no,
okay.
I don't mean it in that sense. You know, that's what people used to say years ago. A hungry man is an angry man.
I was just saying
that, you know, these people need a little assistance.
Okay,
so
ma'am.
Thank you very much for listening.
Okay, no problem, ma'am. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Brother D. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right, sir.
I don't know if you remember Friday, I sent a text asking about my friend Larry. His name was mentioned.
Report?
I also sent a text to Paul and Curtis telling them to remember my boy Rashid in QEH. I don't know if you heard that one.
No, sir, I didn't.
But that text came from me. I heard that they mentioned the name Rashid in QEH. And this only this morning I heard that he passed.
On Saturday.
My condolences to his family and friends. But really, my real problem here now is, can a service provider raise your bill before you signing anything to it?
There is a clause, depending on your contract, that says terms and conditions subject to change without notice. And if it's not regulated by the Fair Trading Commission, they can do so. There's a clause in your contract that says so. The problem is we don't read them. People have just tell us sign there and we just sign there. We didn't know what we signed in. But that's what it says. It says subject to change.
But this thing got me real peeve in the sense that I go in your office, we work out an agreement, saying that you're going to put something in there. And honestly and true, I can sign because I want the service.
And that is where you fall down, sir.
Huh?
And that is exactly, sir, listen, I know you had issues with Flo. I know you went to Digicel. I know you went to Ozone because you told us all that.
No,
now you say you're going back to Flo.
Okay.
You're threatened then. Okay. But you went back to Flo. Let me say this to you, right?
Yeah.
We keep saying we need the service. And because we need the service, we are just saying. I have been called on I don't know how many occasions by Flo 1-800 number telling me that I have a grandfather service, that it's old and outdated, and that they have this new Fandangle service that I need to get. I keep telling them all the time, I'm old enough to be a grandfather. You can't tell me what I need. But we don't have offer that service anymore. That's not my problem. I got it. If you want to discontinue my service and I will sue you. But don't tell me that I need what you have. And that's the problem I have, sir. We keep letting other people tell us what we need. And when we run into problems, we say, oh, Kadir, there is no service provider in Barbados for a telecommunication system that could come to me and tell me, you need to get A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I've given you at a discount. Sign here. And I get signed. I'm not going to do it. You need to come to me and say, sir, I would like to know what you need a telephone for. What do you need internet for? Do you need more airtime to talk to people, or do you need more time to send data to people? If these are your needs, this is what I can offer you. This is the price. Don't come to me and tell me you got higher up, better off, up there, over there, and come and sign here. I can give you a discount because you will be me for the last 25 years and what you have is a grandfather. You're supposed to respect your grandfather. Sir, the problem is every single contract has a clause in it that is beneficial to the provider, not to you. And we need to learn to read contracts or ask what they say before I sign it. Or else
Brother
we're dead in the water. Yes, sir.
Brother D, I had a problem with Flo.
I know that. You said so on more than one occasion.
On more than one occasion. And I went to Digicel.
Mm-hmm.
And then Digicel just sent me a bill telling me that increase my internet speed. Mm-hmm. And then do this and do the next. Mm-hmm. And then put on more pictures. Well, I wanted more pictures. We're letting them take off. So I tell them, no, that can't work. Let me take up one of service. I went back home to my sweet girl, Flo. And Flo gave me back a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And like David did, he said, people got to stand up for the rights, man. No provider shouldn't be doing that to people. Should not be.
Well, wait until the other...
No, brother, you electricity was off yesterday?
No.
Well, in my area, I had a power outage for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I called a friend of mine in St. George. He told me he went on, but he can call his sister. Mm-hmm. And it was on at office in St. John. Did you hear anything from Leighton Paul White West?
Nope. But I could ask.
I would like you to ask. I'd like to know about these things. Mine was off about an hour.
But I thought you used to work with them. You should be able to call somebody from Leighton Paul, man.
But listen, brother, these,
yes, sir.
Every year I used to get 20 almanacs from Leighton Paul. They said that for me. No, I want that from the Leighton.
Why not, man?
They call me and say, well, I'm an that you see, that's how, as you, the delegate in the Republican Party, as you step on Trump foot,
who foot you step on, man? I can ask them what happened,
you know,
because...
The oldest thing I support my mind.
That ain't the reason, man.
So I let them all get message to me, I don't care, I can make sure I pay the bill when the month comes, that don't cut me off.
Mm-hmm.
But I get an Amanaz here.
I will try and find out.
Sir, you can get where it was off. Yesterday, mine was off about an hour.
I will try and find out, sir. No problem at all. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm looking here at the Nation's newspaper on page 5. And the headline is Sandals, Neighbors Upset. And it speaks about entertainment noise, the blast of fireworks. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure about the indiscriminate parking because that's not my concern.
Mm-hmm.
But I was over by the museum on Wednesday night. And about 8 o'clock, I heard this type of loud noise coming from somewhere, I don't know, across the seaside. And it sounded like gunshots from big powered guns, huh? And it scared me. It also scared a couple of people who were attending a lecture at the museum. Mm-hmm. And there were people who were on their phones trying to find out what was happening. And to make matters worse, we heard a siren from the police van going up somewhere Britain's hillside. And I was wondering what this thing was about. There were no lights in the sky. I boast of a very vivid imagination. I thought Barbados was being invaded because of that incessant pounding and rat-a-tat, boom, boom, boom. And I was by the garrison, well, the museum. Mm-hmm. And this morning I took up the Nation's newspaper and I see some reference to blasts of fireworks. And I assume that it was coming from Sanders because the people were speaking about this fireworks entertainment. And somebody said that they were not notified. If I was able to stay at the museum and this thing was allegedly be at Sanders, I can imagine the type of trauma that those people underwent on Wednesday. Some people said that they're accustomed to it, but some people said they were not notified. And I'm wondering, why is it that someone is allowed? I'm not going to ask you to answer the question. I'm wondering why some people are allowed to use fireworks with that kind of volume without notifying people, without it being restricted to a couple of minutes, because it went on for 10 minutes, and scared the devils out of everybody else. So I would hope the authorities would speak to Sandals, in spite of their speaking to some of the neighbors. The authorities speak to Sandals and let them know that they cannot invade the quietness of the community, and by extension, half of Barbados, because if we were able to listen to it from down by the garrison Savannah, I'm sure it ricocheted maybe out to St. George and that kind of place like that. So that's all I want to say.
Well, before you hang up, fireworks displays at one time in Barbados were limited to Old Year's Night. And I think the population expected that there'd be fireworks displays on Old Year's Night. I have heard, well, I presume, fireworks going off at all sorts of times, almost on a weekly basis in various places that I could hear clearly from where I reside. I don't know if perhaps the one you're referring to, I heard it as well, but I did hear fireworks sometimes. Well, I presume it was fireworks during the course of a couple, let's say about a week or so ago. I think it is unfortunate. I don't know what the law governing the display of fireworks currently is. I know at one point it had to be out to sea and not able to fall on or misfire. We had an unfortunate situation in Columbia Rock where fireworks mm-hmm. stored blew up. Mm-hmm. I think there must be some law governing the setting off of fireworks. And part of the law should be, that the public is notified, just as how the Coast Guard from time to time would have notices in the newspaper saying there's a display or whatever, or they're going to fire off the anti-aircraft gun offshore and it might scare the turtles. I think it should be a public notice in the newspaper that on X or Y day, at such and such a time, for a period not exceeding X or Y, a fireworks display will be done at such and such a location. I think it
That's
is.
Very true.
I think it's part of being good corporate citizens, let me put it that way. Because I would hate to think that we would wait until some fellas find fireworks and fire it off in a backyard one day to go and arrest them while allowing people to just set off fireworks whenever they feel like, every time somebody got a birthday or some particular celebration. To me, it just makes sense. This country used to be orderly. What happened to us? No, I mean, seriously, we used to be an orderly country, sir.
Since you, and you can tell me when I have to go. I was speaking to, a Guyanese, and he lamented that Barbados, he was a young man too, he lamented that Barbados has become very disorderly. He wouldn't go back. He said he's not going back to Guyana necessarily to live. He's setting up shop here. But he has lamented that Barbadians have become very disorderly. And he's wondering, you know, why, what took place that it had become that way. You know, so I always say that people who came from the other Caribbean islands to Barbados came because Barbados was an orderly place.
Correct.
We had a certain amount of, I don't know, pride, you know, sometimes people call it arrogance.
That's all right.
And we set a sort of a profile that, you know, people were attracted to coming here. But now I'm not too sure that they come because of that now.
Well, you know, sir, and here's the strange thing about that. This is what I suppose has confused me over the years. Most countries, when people migrate to that country, they assimilate themselves into the culture of the country they're in. Doesn't seem to have happened here.
Okay.
And that's a curious thing for me to observe.
It's interesting.
Yeah, you might check it. We go to the United States and we become Americans. Mm-hmm. We go to the UK, we become citizens of Britain, and well, now they left the EU. We go to Canada, we become Canadians. Trinidadians assimilate to Trinidad culture. In Barbados, it went the other way.
Well, I don't know the reason.
That's my observation. I wondered why.
I know that people who were living in Barbados for 30 odd years. I gave a woman a lift the other day. She's from St. Vincent, and I asked her where she was from because I couldn't understand her accent. And I said to her, well, it seems as if you just came yesterday because her accent was as strong as they can be, you know. But anyhow, maybe, I don't know. Anyhow, look, that's my concern about the fireworks, though.
I got it.
I hope that something is done with that. Okay?
Okay, sir. This is Dr. Brass Sacks.